Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughan, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Good morning. How are you today? Welcome, welcome, welcome to a new edition of Madrid en Inglés. Madrid in English. My name is Richard Vaughan. I'm here to talk to you, to speak to you in English, maybe to stop along the way, to comment on grammar or phonetics or vocabulary. Who knows? Whatever I feel like, but I'm using Madrid, the city of Madrid, and the community of Madrid, the province of Madrid, as the background and base of operations, un telón de fondo y base de operaciones, as a background and base of operations for this program, 1 hour every Sunday from 10 to 11 o'clock. I enjoy it. I enjoy talking about Madrid. And I'm using my life. So basically there are two backdrops, or the backgrounds. One is my life and the other is Madrid. I came to Madrid when I was 20 for the first time as a student. I did my third year of the university in Madrid. I spoke about that in previous programs. And then I returned to the States when I was 21 to finish my degree. And I came back for a second time to Spain, to Madrid, when I was 22, with the idea of spending a couple of years, 2 years, to perfect my Spanish and then to go back to Texas to pursue a doctorate. Decimos perseguir un doctorado, bueno, para cursar un doctorado, to take the necessary courses and to the dissertation for a doctorate in Spanish language and literature. And so those 2 years, I needed to make a living. I needed to pay the rent. I needed to make ends meet. So I started teaching English, first in the Berlitz School for a very short amount of time, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, I can't remember. And then in La Central Nuclear de Zorita, in the province of Guadalajara, they paid me 30,000 pesetas a month. 30,000 pesetas al mes. They paid me. Unión Eléctrica, hoy Naturgy, Gas Natural Fenosa, ahora Naturgy. And they paid me 30,000 pesetas a month, which was a good amount of money at that time. I remember in the nuclear plant, the technical personnel, what is called ingenieros técnicos o peritos industriales, they were earning 21,000 euros, excuse me, 21,000 pesetas a month. And I was earning 30. So, as an English teacher, I was earning more than the young technical engineers working in the control room of a nuclear plant, controlling the operations of a nuclear plant. And I was earning more. And it was tax-free at that time. Don't tell the fisco, don't tell the tax man. But it was tax-free at that time, and so it was what they... I remember one person telling me, said, Richard, estás ganando 30,000 pesetas limpias cada mes. Like, that was a lot of money. But it was, because I was living first in Almonacid de Zorita in a house, I had a bedroom with a family, and then starting in January 1975, I lived in the residence facility next to the nuclear plant, and there I paid a symbolic rent for room and board. Room and board. Board, escrito board, board has many meanings. Board can be una tabla de madera, un tablón. Un tablón de anuncios is a bulletin board. It's a tabla de boletines. Bulletin board. And the board of directors is el consejo de administración de una empresa. The boardroom, la sala de consejos. The boardroom, yes. But board also means la pensión alimenticia, the board. So room and board means habitación y pensión. Pensión completa en este caso. So a room and board. And I paid for it, but it wasn't very much, maybe 3,000 pesetas a month. And I was earning 30,000 pesetas, so I had 27,000 pesetas, and I was living in a place where I couldn't spend money. So if I had been living in Madrid, of course, I would have been more tempted to spend money on the movie theaters, going to restaurants, to bars, taking girls out. Although it is true that when I was living in Guadalajara, near Pastrana, in the nuclear plant, I came into Madrid every week, almost every weekend. I came into Madrid. I always found places to stay with friends or in Isabel's house. You remember Isabel? And so I didn't spend much money, really. I'm not a spender. I don't spend money very much. Never in my life. I have always been quite conservative with money. Frugal, I would say. The word frugal, frugal, frugalidad, frugal, in español quiere decir conservador en el comer. When you say frugal, people think of la dieta, cómo se come. In English, no. In English, frugal means muy conservador con los cuartos, con el dinero. Very frugal with your money. Not with eating. So it's the same meaning, but in English it's applied in general and not only to food. So I was frugal. And I always say, I still am today. Yes, I'm a businessman and an entrepreneur. I take risks, but my risks are very, very well calculated. Very well calculated. And so I really, in my opinion, I don't take risky risks. Tomar riesgos arriesgados? No, I take calculated risks. But in any case, let's get back to the story. So, when I finished at the nuclear plant, as I said in the last segment, I came back to Madrid. And I rented a car, say 600, and I traveled to Asturias and spent 2 weeks traveling around Asturias, and then I returned to Madrid, passing through La Granja, where in a tour of the Palacio de La Granja, I met the manager of Sears, the famous American department store, which at that time in 1975 was located on Serrano Street, Calle Serrano, which is today El Corte Inglés de Serrano. And so I went and met him. I remember his last name was Dusek, a Czech name, un nombre checo, apellido checo. But he was American. And I started teaching English in Sears. And for one month, I lived in the house of Tati. You may remember the Chilean family, La Familia Chilena, the Chilean family that lived in Barrio La Estrella, Calle de los Astros, número 11, creo. I think that was it. I'm trying to remember. On the 12th floor. And so Carmen, the mother, gave me access to the room for free for 1 month. And they gave me time, and I started teaching in Sears. But I had saved a lot of money from the 10 months that I was working in Sorita, in the Central Nuclear, because I didn't spend any money. So I had a lot of cash. Okay, so I wasn't worried about finding work immediately. But I started working in Sears. And I went to the Alliance Française. I decided it's time for me to learn French. Okay. So I went to Alliance Française on Marqués de la Ensenada. Today, it's not Alliance Française on Marqués de la Ensenada, near Plaza Colón. It's in the Tribunales de Justicia. It's a French center, cultural center, but I can't remember. I think it's affiliated with the French embassy in the French state. but it's not Alliance Française. But I went and I started learning French. I was 23. I found it very easy to learn French because I had learned Spanish well. And for me, French is very similar to Spanish. I mean, in Spanish, yo soy, and in French, je suis. Él es un hombre, il est un homme, il est, je suis, which almost is exactly the same. Of course, I'm simplifying this. It's not true. There are important, very important differences between Spanish and French, starting with the pronunciation, of course, the spelling of words, and many things. And there are a lot of false friends, amigos falsos, things you think are the same, but they're not the same. And so I started learning French. And one day, when I left the Alliance Française on Marqués de la Ensenada, I decided, you know, I need to find more work, not only working in Sears. So there was a kiosk, a newsstand, un kiosco de prensa is a newsstand, un stand de noticias, or kiosk. Kiosk is an international word. I think it comes from Hungarian. I'm not sure of the origin of the word kiosk. I think it's an East European word. And so I bought a newspaper, the ABC, 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 because the classified section in ABC was, and today I don't know. I haven't bought a newspaper in 3 years. But the classified section, what you call la sección de anuncios por palabras, we say la sección clasificada. I think it's correct in Spanish, too. The classified section, and I started looking at language schools, and I saw one. I circled it with a pen. Then I went back to the kiosk and asked for a ficha. You may remember, if you're old enough, you may remember, puede que recuerden ustedes, you may remember that in 1975, 1974, 1973, if you wanted to use a telephone booth, cabina telefónica, or a public telephone, you needed una ficha. It didn't take coins. And so you had to buy fichas, I think in estancos y en kioscos, I think. You could buy fichas. And so I went and bought a ficha in the kiosk and went to the telephone booth, which was 2 meters from the bench where I was sitting on Calle Marqués de la Ensenada. And I called a company called Intercom English. And a lady answered in Spanish, but with a strong American accent. And I said, I'm an English teacher, and I'm looking for work. And she, of course, switched to English. And I recognized a very clear New York accent, an accent of a person who grew up in New York City. And she said, well, do you have experience? And I said, yes. I taught for 1 month in Berlitz and for 9 months or 10 months in a nuclear plant in the province of Guadalajara. And she heard my voice. I think she liked my voice. My voice is a very powerful weapon or tool. And when she heard I had taught for over a year, she said, can you come now? Can you come now? And I said, well, yes. And so I went to visit this woman whose name was Deborah Duarte, como Eva Duarte. But I don't think that was her real name. I think she had her name changed. She was a Jewish woman. Judia. She was a Jewish woman. Very good business, well, good businesswoman. She was not a good businesswoman, but she was a very good, she was a very effective witch, bruja, Bruchamui, if you got. And I was a young, innocent boy who could easily be fooled. And so she realized two things. She realized I was intelligent. Second, she realized I was a good teacher and a potential leader. And third, she realized that I was naive, ingenuo. Todavía lo soy. I'm still naive. Naive. Como la pintura naif, con F, naif. Con V en inglés. Naive significa ingenuo. Es una palabra de origen francés. Naive. Con diéresis sobre la I latina. I think it's the only word in the English language that has a diéresis, two dots above the I, naive. And when I got there, we chatted for about 10 minutes. And she asked me, can you do a class right now? I said, well, let's see. Yeah, sure. And she said, there's a Dutch lady, a young Dutch lady, who owns an import-export business. And she's in the classroom number 3. Can you give her a class? I said, well, sure. What's her level? I said, no, she has a good level. And so I walked in and I gave the class to the Dutch lady, and no problem, of course. I knew how to give classes and I knew how to impress my students. And so apparently I got the idea that perhaps this Dutch lady had come and the teacher hadn't shown up. No había hecho acto de presencia el profesor. So, era una alumna, how do you say, huérfana de profe? And so when she spoke to me on the telephone, she said, can you come? And so I gave class to the Dutch lady. And several times later, I continued giving class to the Dutch lady. And I began working with this New York woman, Deborah Duarte, in Intercom. And I worked with her. Let's see, this was probably in late October or the beginning of November 1975. The beginning of November 1975. Okay, I was 23. I turned 24 later in November. No, I turned 24 a few days later. My birthday is on November 9th, La Almudena. And so I started at the beginning of November, maybe November 2nd, because in Spain, November 1st is a holiday. But it was that same day. Maybe I started in late October, probably in late October. And then I started working with her, first as a teacher only. But later, she asked me to take on more responsibilities. Now, this time, I was still living in the with the Chilean family. So it's strange. I'm not sure about my dates. I'm starting to lose touch with the exact dates. But I have a story about how I found, when I had to leave, how I found an apartment. It's interesting. But I started working then in two places. I was working in the in Sears department store as an English teacher. And I was working in Intercom Idiomas, as an English teacher as well, but first only as an English teacher. And this school was located on a tiny street whose name I don't remember. It's not Alfonso XIII. It was one of the kings. I'm going to try to find it before we take a short break. And it was in next to the Plaza Mayor. It was one of the little streets that connect with the Plaza Mayor from the Calle Mayor. All right, well, I'll find the name of that street. If I can find it, just a second. Here we have the Plaza Real. Here we have the Plaza Mayor. All right. Let's see, Calle Tochino, Plaza Mayor. I still can't find it. Here's the Plaza Mayor. All right, now this little street, Di Vieni. It's so small. Let's see. Felipe III. La calle Felipe III. Philip III Street. It's a very tiny street between the Calle Mayor and the Plaza Mayor. And that's where I met the New York lady, the New York Jewish lady, who was the owner and manager of the school. And that's where I started teaching, and for a year. But I'll be right back.
¿Necesitas reír? Pues no te pierdas La madre que me parió en el Teatro Lara, octava temporada de la comedia de éxito que ya han visto más de 500,000 de personas. La madre que me parió en el Teatro Lara, una loca comedia sobre las relaciones madre-hija. Líos y secretos en La madre que me parió. Más info en teatrolara.com.
La violencia contra la mujer se manifiesta de diferentes formas. Agresiones en el propio hogar, violencia sexual, trata de mujeres para la explotación sexual, mutilación genital femenina o matrimonio forzoso. También coacciones para evitar que estudien, sean madres o se desarrollen con libertad.
Todas son una violación de los derechos humanos. Todas son delito. Alcemos la voz. 25 de noviembre, Día Internacional para la Eliminación de la Violencia contra la Mujer. Rompe el silencio. Pacto de Estado contra la Violencia de Género. Comunidad de Madrid.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
Onda Madrid, 101.3 y 106 FM.
Hello and welcome back. All right, we're back. And where are we? We're in November, late October, or early November. Fijaos como lo digo. Finales de octubre o principios de noviembre. 1975. Late October, early November. And another important event was taking place in Spain because Francisco Franco was agonizing. He was on his deathbed. Leche de muerte. We say deathbed. Francisco Franco. Francisco Franco, of course, developed complications starting in early or mid-October. He died on November 20th. So, when I started working in Intercom with this lady from New York City, Francisco Franco was getting close. He was dying. He was dying. And this also prompted what is called the Green March. You probably remember La Marcha Verde, in which Hassan II, the king of Morocco, Hassan II, when he received information from his Secret Service that Francisco Franco was unable to run the government, that he was on dying, he decided to activate a plan which was called the Green March. And he sent tens of thousands of people, Moroccans, walking to the south to the border between Morocco and the Spanish Sahara, which you call the Sahara Español. And the legionaries who were stationed along the border were awaiting orders from the Spanish government to fire upon the people who were coming, the tens of thousands, walking. And they never received the order. And so they did not fire, and the people crossed the border into the Spanish Sahara. And in essence, King Hassan II took the Spanish Sahara as part of Morocco, and Spain never recovered it. It became called the Western Sahara, Sahara Occidental, and in the United Nations, there's still a debate going on about who should be the final sovereigns or who should possess sovereignty over that important piece of land that's important for phosphates, fosfatos. One of the reasons that there's so many important chemical plants in Huelva, in the south of Spain, in Andalusia, is because it's one of the closest points to between Sahara Espanol and the Iberian Peninsula. But then during this period, when Francisco Franco was dying and Spain was losing the Spanish Sahara in Africa, I started working in Intercom. And I worked in Intercom until December of the following year, December 1976. No, until January 1977. Yes, until January 1977. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. So I worked, I would say, for 14 months, maybe. 14 and a half months, something like that, for 14 months. Working in that company. And by the end, I was, let's say, the general manager, really. I was managing the teachers. I was in charge of the teachers, maybe 25 teachers, 20 teachers. And I was also in charge of translations. A lot of things were happening at that time. A lot of things were happening. Now, in this company, Intercom Idiomas, is where I met my wife, Fernanda. She was the receptionist for the evenings from 4 to 9, something like that, from 4 o'clock to 9 o'clock, or from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the evening, or 10 o'clock, I can't remember. But she was studying at the university in the mornings, and she was working in the afternoon evenings. And there I met her in early November 1975. When I turned 24. So I met my wife when I turned, almost exactly when I turned 24, in the first half of November, 1975. We got married in December 1977, so almost exactly 2 years later. I met her, but we didn't start going out together until a year and a few months later, until 14 months later. So for 14 months, we were simply friends, working together in Intercom Idiomas. I was her boss, finally. At the beginning, no, of course, I was simply an English teacher. But because the lady from New York, la neoyorquina judía, she was a very intelligent woman, but she was a dangerous woman. And she promoted me to basically run the business, to tell you the truth. I was running her business in every way, teachers, sales, but especially in translations. Francisco Franco died on November 20th. I think it was 20th. 1975. Maybe it was the 21st. 1975. And within a week or 7 or 8 days, Juan Carlos, the Prince Juan Carlos, was crowned King of Spain. Juan Carlos I, young Charles, Juan Carlos I. And he decided to, he named Carlos Arias Navarro as the Prime Minister of Spain. Carlos Arias Navarro was already the Prime Minister of Spain. Here in Spain, you say Presidente del Gobierno, President of the Government. That is not a common saying in English. He was the term, the figure in Spain, la figura del Presidente del Gobierno, es el Primer Ministro de Español, Primer Ministro Español. And so a year earlier, in 1973, no, excuse me, 2 years earlier, almost 2 years early, in December 1973, you remember that, what's his name? Oh, Carrero Blanco. Luis Carrero Blanco was assassinated in a terrorist attempt, an explosion on Calle Claudio Cuello near Diego León, Calle Maldonado. And after he was killed, assassinated, the Francisco Franco chose Carlos Arias Navarro as the prime minister. 2 years later, Franco died, and the king decided not to make changes yet. And so he named Carlos Arias Navarro to continue as prime minister of Spain, or president of the government. And that first government still maintained a lot of the elements of the Franco regime. Fraga continued, but there were others, some new ones. El Conde Motrico, Arelza, José María Arelza, and others. It was an interesting group. But nevertheless, I was busy teaching English, and I needed to find a place to live. I needed to find a place to live because I couldn't stay with the Chilean family because they needed to rent that room. I was staying for free. And so one morning, you know, when I had maybe 2 or 3 days left, I needed to find a place to stay. I got up at, I don't know, I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning, took a shower, had a coffee, left the Chilean family's house, and I took the underground, or the bus, probably the bus, from Barrio de la Estrella to La Puerta del Sol, to the Kilometro Cero, to Puerta del Sol. Now, at that time, in 1975, in La Puerta del Sol, on the western side where Calle Arenal and Calle Mayor almost come together, that little area, there was an enormous kiosco, a big kiosk. And that I knew from experience that this was the kiosk that received the first newspapers in the morning, de las rotativas, that the first newspapers came. So I went there. I got there at about 6:45. And the kiosk was open, but the newspapers had not arrived. At that time, the newspapers were ABC, Ya, El País, you know, Ya, and I can't remember if El Alcázar, you know, the Franco newspaper, or I'm trying to remember some of the newspapers, but the two most important newspapers were ABC and Ya, and another afternoon newspaper called Informaciones. But I wanted ABC because of the classified section again. And so I was waiting, and the truck arrived, and boom, out came several packages of ABC. And the moment the newsstand operator, el kiosquero, cut the strings around the package of newspapers, I took one. I paid him. And I sat down on a bench in the Puerta del Sol, and I opened the newspaper to the classified section, straight to apartments, apartamentos en alquiler, apartments for rent. And I began to circle, 1, 2, 3, putting a circle around different apartments. And I had bought fichas, you know, the tokens. See, you see the tokens. I bought tokens for to make telephone calls. And at about 7:05, I was in a telephone booth, in a cabina telefónica, and I started calling at 7:05. And the first person I called, a woman answered immediately after the first or second ring. Dígame? All right, she had, I said. And I said in my Spanish, llamo por el anuncio en ABC de un apartamento en la calle Princesa. All right. And she said, yeah. I said, perdone que llame tan temprano por la mañana. And she said, well, normal. She said, I was awake. She said, yo estaba despierta. Ya sabía que me iban a llamar. Siempre pasa. And so she was sitting next to the telephone waiting and coinciding when the newspapers hit the newsstands, and she was waiting. And so I said I was interested. And apparently she liked my voice. And I think she was intrigued by my accent, because I had a slight accent. I have a stronger accent now than I had then. And so I had a slight accent. And she said, where are you? I said, I'm in the Porto Azul. And she said, well, can you come to my house? I live only about 10 or 15 minutes away. And I said, well, sure. So where's your house? I said, Calle Ballesta. All right. Detrás del edificio Telefónica de Gran Vía. Well, Gran Vía, Avenida José Antonio. Gran Vía was not called Gran Vía at that time. And so I went. I was not, at that time, I was not aware that this area was the red light district in Madrid. Red light district, distrito del distrito de la luz roja, which means it was the prostitution district. Okay. And so Calle Ballesta is very famous in another. There are two streets that are famous. Not today, perhaps, but many years ago. And so I've walked maybe 10 minutes from the Puerto del Sol, crossing Avenida José Antonio, and then finding Calle Ballesta and walking up to Ballesta number, no sé qué. I don't remember the number. But I don't remember the door was open. I think it was. Portero ya. I think it was, because at that time, still they didn't have porteros automáticos. And so I went up to the first floor, second floor, I don't remember. I rang the doorbell, and a woman answered the door. And it was interesting because she was probably 50 years old. She was heavy set. Heavy set means corpulenta. And it was clear that she was a madame. She was a madame. She had previously been. It was clear that she had worked in the world of prostitution for many, many years, and that she was a businesswoman. And so it was interesting. Her apartment or her flat was very, very well decorated. It was impressive. My God. This woman has a lot of money. And she lived there alone. And it was like una madama, you know. And she asked me to sit down, and we spent an hour talking. I think she was intrigued by me. I was a good-looking kid, by the way. You know, I was 23, or just turned 24, I can't remember. And she thought, I think she liked me. But she saw me as very young, of course. She was probably 50 or maybe 55 years old. And I asked her how many apartments she had. She said, I have 17. Era dueña de 17 apartamentos. Esta madame. All right. And so she had 17. So she was a very good businesswoman. And so we reached a deal. And I rented an apartment on Calle Princesa. What you call in Spanish, un apartamento estudio. Very, very small. Maybe 30 square meters only. On Calle Princesa número 8, just opposite La Plaza de los Cubos. Okay. And it's interesting because in the Plaza de los Cubos, during that year that I lived there on that street, the just in the Plaza de los Cubos was the first VIPs, El VIPs, the first VIPs in Madrid. It was in 1975 or 1976 in the Plaza de Cubos. I lived just opposite. And with the movie theaters as well, Los Cines que había. Ya empezó a ver. They started putting movie theaters in the Plaza de Cubos. And so I lived very near the Plaza España. And I rented this efficiency apartment In the United States, at least when I was growing up, we said efficiency apartment, in which there are no bedrooms. The living room is also the bedroom, and it was very, very small. But it was enough for me. It was enough. And so I began working full-time, really, in the Intercom Academy on Felipe III, Felipe III. And then the New York lady moved the offices from Felipe III to Calle Mayor. Yes, very close to the Puerta del Sol. And so with four classrooms, an office for her, and that was it. And there. But I did most of my teaching in companies. Ford Motor Company, Otis Elevator, Sardoyotis Ascensores, Otis Elevator, and also in many other companies, laboratories, etc., etc. It was a good experience, and also in Villa Verde Bajo, in Tafesa. In Ferrocarril, it was in a company that made train cars, vagones, and things. So it was interesting. I was teaching English, and I was honing my skills, getting better and better and better. So I was living on Calle Princesa. I was working on the Calle Mayor, or in Villa Verde Bajo, and also in Cusco, where Ford Motor Company had their offices. And in many other places, and I was starting, and the lady from New York was starting to notice my skills for other types of work. And she proposed other types of work, and I'll tell you after the break.
Llega la Navidad. Es momento de compartir, de disfrutar, de revivir los mejores momentos. Maestros Asadores del Auténtico Cordero y Cochinillo Segoviano. Reserva tu cena con nosotros en asadorvillaranda.com.
Dame una manzana y moveré el mundo. Arquímedes hoy sería cooperativista de la OSA. El supermercado con buenos alimentos, buena gente, buenos precios. Tú también puedes cuidarte y cuidar del planeta. Súmate a la OSA. Avenida de Asturias 57, Madrid. Es un consejo de UNCUMA, Unión de Cooperativas de Consumidores y Usuarios de Madrid. Campaña cofinanciada por la Comunidad de Madrid.
¿Necesitas guardar tus muebles en espera de nueva vivienda o reforma? Confía en Estebaranz. Llevamos los contenedores a tu casa para una mínima manipulación. Mudanzas y guardamuebles Estebaranz. Desde siempre a tu lado.
101.3 y 106 FM. Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. Okay, we're back for our last little 10-minute segment. And I'm in Madrid. I'm 24 years old. I'm in a period that is between November, let's say from November 1975, when Franco dies and Juan Carlos becomes the king, until, let's say, July 1976. In fact, the most important month of that year is really September. But I'm not going to have time, I believe, in my program today to talk about what happened in September. What happened in July was important for Spain, because in July 1976, Juan Carlos I, the King of Spain, together with Torquato Fernández Miranda and others, made a decision to dismiss Carlos Arias Navarro as the prime minister and to name Adolfo Suárez. And I remember very well the newspapers in the newsstand in the morning. It was a surprise for everybody. A picture of a very handsome man, Adolfo Suárez, on the front pages of the newspapers. The new president of the government. And very few people knew who he was. I knew who he was because in December of the previous year, 1975, The lady from New York, who was running Intercomidiomas, asked me to translate the biography of all the ministers of the new Arias Navarro government after Juan Carlos named him, well, appointed him to continue. And so it was a new government in Carlos Arias Navarro, in view of the fact that Francisco Franco was no longer the head of state, but Juan Carlos I, he decided to create a new government, new ministers, etc. And the most important client, or the second most important client for Intercom, was Ford Motor Company, La Ford, La Empresa Ford. And so she asked me to translate the biographies because the Ford Motor Company, Ford España, they wanted to send the biography of the new government, the different minister, the prime minister and the different ministers, to the Ford Motor Company headquarters in the United States. And so I got the biographies from the newspaper, maybe a two-paragraph biography on all 20 or 25 ministers, quite a few, eh? At that time, no había ministro de defensa. There wasn't defense minister. You had the ministro del ejército, ministro de la marina, y ministro de las fuerzas aéreas. Okay, Air Force minister, Navy minister, and the Army minister. I remember these guys. And so I translated these things, and so this lady from New York, Deborah Duarte, she realized I was a good translator, that I could write well in English. She saw that my skill at writing was very, very good, and she saw that I could write very well in Spanish as well. And she said, hey, I have a good translator here. And so she began to promote translations as well and to give them to me. And so I was teaching by January 1975, I was teaching maybe 25 hours a week. And I was translating for another 10 hours a week. And I was managing the translations 5 hours a week. And in the end, I was working full time. And she also realized that I had good communication skills and good leadership skills. And so by March 1976, I was the teacher, the manager of teachers as well. So I was the general manager of the business, basically, because I was overseeing the translation department. Most of the translations I did myself. And I was hiring and firing teachers, and I was teaching myself 20 or 25 hours a week. So I was working a lot. Really, I think I was working maybe 60 hours a week. That's a lot. 60 hours a week. Monday to Friday, which means 12 hours a day. I was getting up at 7 o'clock or 6:30. I was getting up probably at 6:30. You know, it's interesting that I was living, as I said, on Princesa Número 8, Princesa Street. And at that time, of course, we didn't have cell phones. Telefonía móvil estaba lejos todavía. So I didn't have cell phones, but I had a telephone. And I called every evening. I called the operator on the telephone because they had a wake-up service. And so I called and I would say, can you wake me up tomorrow at 6:30, please? And so they, every morning at 6:30, they would ring and say, good morning, it's time to get up. So I got up. But it was interesting because I remembered the telephone number. Seven digits, telephone number. 242-3222. Okay, and why do I remember it? 242-3222. 242-3222. And why do I remember? Maybe once a week, I received a telephone call from a baby child, from a little girl, little child. You know that children, Back then, now no, because people don't have landline telephones in their house. But every house in Spain had a telephone, practically. And many times a little baby, maybe 7 months old, 1 year old, it starts playing with the telephone and the mother doesn't see. And the baby is dialing the phone con el ruido ese. And it's interesting, 2-4-2-3-2-2-2. By accident, in a country of 40 million people, well, by accident, I received a telephone call from a baby about once a week because of that telephone number. And so that's why they say 0-21. That was the number for emergency, porque 0-9-1 is difficult for a baby to accidentally dial. So that's why it's one of the reasons they say 0-21, originally for the emergency number. And here I was in Madrid. I didn't have a girlfriend. I hadn't started going out with my wife yet. Although a lady from the nuclear plant, 9 years my senior, 9 years older than me, came into Madrid to see me as often as possible. And so I was very, very busy in on every front, sentimental and professional front. So I was a very busy man. But it was fine. Madrid was changing. 1976. The inflation in Spain in 1976 was 26%. You perhaps don't remember this. And in 1976, I think ETA, between ETA and Grapo, I think close to 80 people were killed. So the terrorist activity was very prevalent in 1976. However, people were optimistic because Spain was moving, perhaps, toward a democracy, self-rule. And so people were optimistic despite the inflation and despite the terrorist activity. But there was a lot of labor conflict, and the economy was not going well. There was a lot of labor conflict, especially in the industrial areas around the big cities, around Madrid, in Villaverde, and in around Barcelona and Bilbao. There was a lot of labor activity. But I'm running out of time again for today. This is my, I'm every Sunday, but I have to say goodbye now. It's been a real pleasure. And I hope you've enjoyed this program, but there are a lot more in the future. Take care.